Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Simon Phipps, episode 139 for October 13th, 2010. Al fresco. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show of free, libre, open-source software brought to you weekly by me, Randall Schwartz, your host, Merlin at Stonehenge.com. This week, I have a really wonderful co-host. I always appreciate when he's on the show. Let's go ahead and bring him on. Simon Phipps, welcome back.
Hey, great to be on the show again, Randall. Hello.
Hi. And where are we speaking to you from? You're in England somewhere, right?
I'm here in the United Kingdom, and there's going to be a continuity error when people see this because it's dark outside now. But yeah, I'm in Southampton, down on the south coast of the United Kingdom, and in my palatial office facility in the cabin at the end of my garden.
Very cool, very cool. And I'm, of course, for people who are watching the video, I'm speaking to you from the 43rd floor of the ninth tallest building in L.A., and you can see the bright sunny day behind me. It was actually dark and cloudy earlier today. That's not normal for L.A. Well, rather than wasting our audience's time, because I think this is going to be a really interesting show, lots of stuff going on here for today, we have the Alfresco project, which is a enterprise content management system. Now, we had a CMS, a Plone, on a few weeks ago, which had some overlap, I think, with what Alfresco is going to be for today. But I think this is more for larger installations, like maybe tens or hundreds of thousands of users, where I'm not sure if Plone would actually scale up that well. But we have on today, we have John Newton, who is the chief technology officer for Alfresco. And I believe he's speaking to us from England, which will be nice. And we have Luis, I'm going to mispronounce this again. I'm trying to say salsa. Luis Sala. There we go. Not salsa, like I said a few times. Really apologize for that in some of the previous shows. He's the chief community officer for Alfresco. So any opening words before we bring him on?
No, I think this is going to be a fascinating discussion. I think that Alfresco is a very interesting product that's going to have a big impact in bringing open source software to governments throughout the world as they have open source policies. So I'm very excited to talk to these guys about what they're doing.
So let's go ahead and bring our guests on the line. We'll start first with John Newton. John, welcome to the show.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
And where are we speaking to you from?
I'm in England right now, not far from Windsor Castle and Heathrow Airport.
I've heard of those places. Actually, I've heard of Stonehenge, my company's namesake. I've actually been there. So that's the one time I've been to England, I've actually been to Stonehenge and been to near some other places that are near there. But enough about me. Let me go ahead and also bring on our other guest, Luis Sala. And where are we speaking to you from?
Hey, Randall. I'm in Morgan Hill, California, just south of San Jose.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, through the miracle of Skype, we're able to have this conversation amongst all these different locations. But let's get right to the core of why we're here. I gave a sort of a 30-second overview, high-level view of what Alfresco is all about, but I probably mangled it badly because I have a lot of big enterprise terms, things like that. So, John, why don't you start and tell us a little bit about what the Alfresco is in the sort of the 30-second overview.
Yeah, sure. Alfresco has been around since 2005, and we're focused on an area of enterprise software called enterprise content management. And it's an area that actually my previous company that I was a founder at, Documentum, we pioneered. And we're now doing it as open source. Basically, it's for taking all the different content across the enterprise, especially the very valuable content, things like office documents, website content, scanned images, digital assets, things like that, and putting controls on it so that you're making sure that it's the truth, that it's accurate, and that it'll be retained, and you can actually find it eventually.
So before setups like this, people, of course, had things like Windows shares or your Linux NFS mounts, things like that. So what else is going on top of something like that? Why would I need a content management system?
Yeah, well, at the moment, I think enterprise content management tends to compete with things like shared drives. And as we all know, shared drives are getting out of control. What Alfresco does and enterprise content management does in general is it takes the notion of a shared drive and puts some control behind it. So it's dealing with check in, check out, so you have revision control. It's adding metadata on it so that you can classify it and add status and process information. And it's retaining it. It's putting it in a location that you can actually find it. So instead of having things like all the little cubby holes on your shared drive where you put stuff and you can never find it, it's just organizing in a way that you can actually get access to it. So we're sitting on top of a shared drive ourselves, but it's just much easier to find information and to know what it's about and know which is the right version of information.
I do a lot of work for clients, and I don't know that when I go on a client site, they tell me, well, you get the file for what you're looking at by going to this drive, and you go to the folder that's named this, then there's a subfolder named that, and sometimes there's a README in there to tell me what the folders are about. And this is sort of just to really sort of take that all to the next level, Dan, so I could actually go into this. So is it a web-based interface that I'm going to?
It's a web-based interface, and we actually emulate a shared drive so that you don't have to learn anything new. And what's happening in the background is there's sets of rules to handle all the controls and workflows and things like that. But when you're dealing with some pretty large industries, things like governments and financial services and manufacturing, some of that information, it's just not acceptable to just go ahead and store it on shared drives, especially if customers need it or your partners need it, vendors need it, things like contracts. It's just not the way things are done anymore. So it's actually a pretty lucrative business. In fact, for the industry overall, it's about a $4 to $5 billion industry now.
Mm-hmm. And I understand there's a component of this that's open source, or we wouldn't be talking to you guys today. Luis, you want to describe what part of this is open source and what part of it is proprietary?
Well, the entire thing is open source. We do have, like much like Red Hat does, a community edition and an enterprise edition, but functionally they're almost like 99.8% identical. So everything is available for open source. Just go to alfresco.com. You can download it and play around with it. To talk a little bit about the technology, just so we understand kind of how we built the system, it is Java-based. And as a Java-based app, we ourselves are using other open source technologies, including some other subcomponents that we ourselves wrote. So when John was talking about the shared drive and that we emulate a shared drive, we're actually using a pure Java-based SIFS file server. SIFS is Common Internet File System, or SMB, or Samba, right? So think of it as a Java version of Samba on Linux, and we're running that internally. So Alfresco itself has like a myriad of different interfaces, the web-based UI, the shared drive UI, the shared drive interface, FTP, NFS, and a bunch of others. The whole idea is that you can access the system in a million different ways, and you still gain the control that you need for your content, including the version control, the workflows, security model, and so forth.
Now, was this open source from the beginning?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
Okay, and so what brought you to making that open source from the beginning?
I'll let John take that.
Yeah, sure. Part of it has to do with the fact that I'm here in England right now. I've been here for about 15 years. And as I mentioned, I started Documentum. But 2005, I had left Documentum, and we wanted to start a company. And when you look at things like Linux coming out of Scandinavia and MySQL coming out of Scandinavia and JBoss being started by a Frenchman, it just seemed like that was an area that actually worked in terms of starting a company from over here rather than in the valley like I'd done before. So, this whole area of enterprise content management has been very big, but dominated by vendors like IBM and EMC and OpenText. And it just seemed like there was a real opportunity to exploit our core competence in content management with open source. And it's the other reason for doing it is just that open source is a whole lot more fun than the old proprietary way of building enterprise software. It's just we enjoy getting up in the morning, you know, compared to the old slog that we had before.
Well, not to mention, I think it helped us build the software a lot more quickly and effectively and cheaply compared to traditional proprietary technologies. I think it'd be useful, John, if you could share a little bit about how you guys, you know, how long it took you guys to release the first version.
Yeah, so I brought along a team with me from Documentum, and so we knew what we were doing to begin with, but, you know, just kind of thinking about how long these things take, you know, you just assume that it was going to be at least a year before we were able to build anything. But first thing we did was we brought in Spring. We actually engaged Rod Johnson as a consultant very early on in Interface 21. We brought in Spring, we used Lucene, we used JBoss Hibernate to get going, and within 6 months, we had something going. Started in January, pretty much the beginning of January 2005, and we were ready for, you know, some of the conferences in the summertime, like Java 1, and in June, and it took literally about 6 months to get stuff up and going. It was just record time. And we continued to do that as there were other projects like some of the workflow engines like JBPM that we could include. It just got us going a whole lot faster than before. I have to guess that it cut development costs and time to a fraction of what I had experienced before in enterprise software.
So going on from there, John, do you have very many co-developers in your community, or are you doing all the development for new versions yourself in-house?
Well, I think, you know, we're probably not a whole lot different than a lot of other open source projects like JBoss and MySQL, at least MySQL previous to its current incarnation. So I'd say, you know, maybe about 10% of the code has been developed outside. There is a lot of internal development that's being done by us, and, you know, it's distributed all over the world. You know, as part of an enterprise open source product, we want to make sure that there's good governance on it. But we've had all sorts of contributions, primarily from system integrators, governments, people who want to make sure that what they've done and extended is reused and maintenance is shared overall. So I wouldn't say that it's at an Apache level of, you know, just completely open to lots of other people. It's more like the other areas of professional open source where there is lots of participation, but the majority is done by us.
Right. Yeah. So when you say participation, yeah, is that people, is that basically customers who are contributing bug reports and the occasional fix? Do you have any competitors or partners who are co-developing core code, or is all of that participation out on the periphery of the code base?
No, it's some of it has been right at the heart of it. So things like metadata extraction, which actually went into the core of the system very early on, was done by a system integrator. We've had changes in security models and more complex security being created by government agencies and contributed back. There certainly is things like bug fixes and stuff like that, but it's not, you know, there is definitely other core pieces of the system that are being contributed by customers, partners. Right. We've also started an open source project with the founder of JBPM that is an Apache-based model, Apache-based license, and we have lots of contribution from several other companies. So that has been you know, more people participating overall rather than just Alfresco being involved in the project to right. a large extent.
So how do you feel about the changes that we've seen happening since Oracle took over Sun, particularly with OpenJDK? There seems to be a trend towards that as a Java platform. Is that something that you will be supporting with Alfresco?
That's a really good question, and I got asked that today. I'm a little bit concerned about what's happening there. I'm not sure I can really comment at this point because I haven't really thought through the implications of it overall. Java is really important to us. Keeping Java open is important as well. So I guess stay tuned here. I can't really comment yet.
Right. Do you think we would see you joining in with the JCP in order to try and guarantee the future of a Java that serves Alfresco?
We have participated in the JCP in the past for things like JSR 170 and JSR 283. And we also participated in some of the other user interface standards on there. So it's something that we would definitely consider.
Right. And so one of the things that these changes have shown to a lot of people is the problems that you might encounter with a single vendor dominated open source project. We've seen, for example, in the cloud space, the OpenStack guys who were on the show a few weeks ago explicitly going for a model which is multi-party rather than single party and which is open by rule rather than open core. Do you think that's a direction that you'd want to take Alfresco, or do you think that you're going to stick with the model you're using?
Well, as I mentioned, we're trying other models overall. So we've created the ACCP, which is the Alfresco community project. And Luis can probably talk about that a little bit more to open up the process to actually have more and more committers directly committing the code to the community stack overall. Activity project, which is our workflow and business process management engine, as I mentioned, is Apache licensed. We have several vendors in it right now, and something we're considering is just contributing it to the Apache Foundation. We definitely want to make that very open. And so we'll be learning more about what does it mean to have professional software and open up the process overall. The other thing is that we have been active in removing some of the LGPL components, which actually give us more opportunity to consider the, you know, more liberally licensed models for Alfresco. So, for instance, we've been moving toward removing Hibernate, and our latest version moves from Hibernate to Ibotis so that we have an open data layer that we can use. And one of the reasons for going and building our own workflow engine wasn't that there was something technically wrong with JBPM, but that we wanted an Apache licensed workflow engine as well. And that's attracted a lot of other software companies to want to use that platform. It's still very early on. It's just about to go into beta here. But it's, we're trying to open up our options to do exactly that, to make it a more open platform.
Yeah, I think go ahead.
Certainly, my reflections over the years have gradually shifted on this. When I was at Sun, I felt that we were very much in the era where guarding your options for future products was appropriate. But I believe we're very much coming into an era where we've seen that the benefits you get from reserving control don't bring in as much money as the benefits that you get from facilitating an ecosystem and innovation. So I get the impression that we'll see a number of companies gradually, gently exploring that direction of open by rule rather than simply open code. I'm sorry, Luis, you were going to say.
No, I was just going to talk about external contributions. I think one thing we have to recognize is that, you know, there's a certain degree of domain expertise that's required to understand enterprise content management, you know, and revision control workflows and everything else. So you know, we do have the Alfresco community committer program, which encourages contributions. However, in general, while we do get some, you know, a handful of contributions to the core of the product, most of the contributions are really ancillary extensions that add new new functionality, extend the product in one way or another. Part of what is challenging and we're addressing is that, you know, it is, after all, a Java-based product. And when you look at the body of Java developers compared to the sheer quantity of, say, PHP or other scripting language developers, you know, you see that there's a bit of a disparity, and that certainly can be a bit of a turnoff. So to that end, one of the ways that we encourage people to extend and contribute to the product is to leverage scripting languages within the application. So we've embedded, for example, server-side JavaScript and the free marker templating language. We're also supporting some of the other JavaScripting languages like Ruby, JRuby, better said, and Groovy and stuff like that, so that you can extend Alfresco more easily and not have to be a pure, you know, hardcore Java developer.
Right. I hear what you're saying about the difficulties of getting contributors with domain expertise, but really that comes through enabling co-developers from complementary companies to join the community. And typically that the stances that many of us have taken in open source companies over the last decade have actually discouraged that aggregation of domain skill coming into a community. And I think the point I'm making is that I'm seeing a trend towards realizing the benefit you get from drawing in even competitors into your product may well outweigh the benefits that you thought you were going to get from having control that excluded them. And I believe we're going to see quite a lot of that over the next few years as people realize that a multi-party community may well make them more money than a controlled community does.
I think that's a fair valid point.
Yeah. What we're seeing right now in our industry is that there's, first of all, a lot of competitors have come together and finally defined a standard for content management, something called CMIS, which is part of the OASIS Foundation. It's both a SOAP protocol and also a REST-based protocol, ATOM-PUB to be specific. And so we wanted to make sure that the platform was as open as possible, that people actually did have the ability to do whatever they wanted with the platform. We're starting with an LGPL license in order to make sure that you know, that you don't have the GPL infection that comes with some of these products. So we're opening from that perspective.
Brave man.
Yeah. And, you know, I do think you're right to a certain extent. It's really about leadership in an open source project that really kind of establishes, you know, the basis for what's going to happen. You know, what we do sell is support services on top of it. And so you want to go with the experts in that area. That doesn't necessarily require control in order to be the leader, the expert in the area, but it does require leadership overall. I'm not sure that I necessarily agree with you that there's lots of people moving to a more open model, because what you do see is that how you make money on open source is adjacent products or services overall. With workflow, what we can see is that there's the opportunity to sell more Alfresco in conjunction with a workflow engine. It is standards-based, using the CMIS to say, you know, you don't have to use Alfresco as part of it. You can use somebody else's CMIS engine, and most vendors are creating some sort of CMIS connector overall. But you know, I've seen a lot of companies fail as well, and that's why I think a lot of people have to look at this very carefully. But we do want to keep it open. We do want to collaborate. We have been collaborating in another area, which is open CMIS, with companies like OpenText and Nuxio and SAP in creation of the chemistry project and open CMIS. Everybody using those together. We are taking those steps, but you know, I think it's not a proven fact yet that more open communities do make more money compared to closed communities. But that doesn't mean that we're going to go closed.
they certainly do for the overall community, as I think Sun discovered with Java. But yes. the to move on from there, I see you facing some competition in, already in the market and in the future. In one dimension, there's from the cloud, where I envisage Dropbox and Google Docs beginning to be pretenders for this enterprise content management mantle. Do you have a cloud plan that you intend to roll out to compete with those guys and head them off at the pass?
Well, I think there's a segmentation of the market overall, you know, Dropbox and Box.net and things like that are aimed at more consumer usage of content control. And there's certainly an opportunity out there. The fact that they start with three users is kind of in a completely different league than the stuff that we do overall. We have spent a lot of time, though, talking to some of the biggest corporations in the world. We've got about 1,200 customers right now, and about 70% of them are from large organizations. And we keep asking the cloud question overall because, you know, to a certain extent, it seems like it is inevitable. It is the future. It's just not for the next couple of years for a lot of these guys. Where we do see the opportunity is primarily there is an SMB market for this, and it's primarily local governments, state governments. It's also for education as well. Lots of universities using this, with a lot of universities under severe budget constraints. And so we have been partnering so far with companies to create those offerings. But I think that, you know, we will be providing solutions that are deployable on the cloud in the future, and that you know, the product is designed to be able to run on premise or in the cloud. It is multi-tenant. Luis has done a lot of work as well to make sure that it's easily provisioned on things like Amazon.
That's right.
So. Yeah, and maybe, Luis, you'd like to talk about it overall. But we do see a future for it, but the majority of our business will probably still be on-premise with a growing SMB in the industries that I mentioned.
Right. The other off-the-wall question I was going to ask, and I don't know whether it's to you or to Luis, is I've been fascinated by a technology called Tahoe, which is a distributed file system that avoids the risks and problems you have from centralization by effectively giving you a massively redundant RAID in the cloud. I wonder if Tahoe Labs has been a technology you've been looking at as a way of offering to your customers and users that highly secure, highly redundant storage at low cost.
So I haven't seen Tahoe in particular, but there are a myriad of different cloud store types of systems out there. You know, there's Gluster, what's the other one? Karingo and a bunch of others, including HDFS and Hadoop. And they all share some very common properties, including, you know, the redundancy, the fault tolerance, and so forth and so on. So to that end, you know, as John hinted, I have a bit of a cloud fetish, and I really love all things cloud. So to that end, I wrote an adapter for Alfresco so that we can store the actual assets. So when you upload a document, a video file, whatever, that in turn gets stored normally in on your standard, you know, enterprise storage, be it a NAS or a local file system or something like that. So I wrote an adapter that stores it into Amazon S3, another one for HDFS, and a contributor wrote one that stores it into Karingo. So in a nutshell, because we're modular, you can plug in alternate storage backends, and so one for Tahoe is certainly doable.
I've been at a lot of organizations that some of this stuff, luckily, I haven't had to set up. I mean, I did a lot of sysadmin back in the early 90s, and we just had some NFS drives, and that was it. So all this modern content management systems and NetShares are all kind of new to me. But at what point does something like Alfresco make sense in terms of size? I mean, I wouldn't have it for like me and my buddy in a small office, right? There's probably a minimum threshold at which it starts becoming interesting, right?
Yeah, we're looking at a starter kit that of our enterprise product that will start, you know, something in a couple dozen users, and be very reasonably priced above. A couple dozen users for free, freemium product And you always have the community version that's absolutely free, and kind of scale up on a per user basis. So far, we've been pricing primarily on a CPU basis. And like I mentioned, 70% of our customers are starting, you know, are in very large corporations, but they'll probably start in maybe about 50 users, something like that. But it could go into literally hundreds of thousands of users overall. You know, in other products that I've seen as well, you know, you probably get the payoff when you're in a few hundred users, something like that, where things are just way out of control that you can't do anything on shared drives overall. But to a certain extent, I think all of us can probably use some form of content management, you know, with a gig on my laptop here. A terabyte on my laptop. Hey, what year is this?
Maybe you only have a gig left. I only have a gig left on this one.
With the terabyte, it's sort of like what, you know, I can't find stuff anymore sometimes. And so just run a content management system on top of it. You know, when you think about all the media and pictures and all the rest of it on there, I think content management with the types of capabilities we're talking about is going to become a personal requirement or even a family requirement, let alone an enterprise requirement.
Is there a chance that you can install this in a small environment? Then what's sort of the minimal install, what the minimal footprint of this thing is?
Well, a couple of years ago, we went ahead and handed out a bunch of USB sticks with Alfresco on it. And when you plug in the USB stick, it's up and running. So it had everything it needed to be able to run Alfresco, and it would just store things on your hard drive. So go ahead, Luis.
It is relatively small. I was going to say that back in the day when I first joined the company, the whole thing was being distributed in about 20 megabyte package, excluding the database. So you would still need something like MySQL, et cetera, in there. Nowadays, the core application is probably in the 80 meg range, and our installer weighs in at about 400 megs, but includes all the components that you need, because we ourselves use other open source components, as I mentioned. So the database, MySQL, we use OpenOffice for document transformation. So that's converting a document from, say, Word to PDF and a few other things. But you know, as John mentioned, you know, there's this thing scales up and down in terms of usability. In fact, if you look just over my shoulder, you're going to see a little black box. That's my 8 terabyte Drobo, and I have that, you know, basically being front ended by an Alfresco instance that I'm running locally because, well, you know, I keep certain media files in there that I want to make sure that I can find again a little bit later. So that's I think, you know, how we can use it on a more personal level. And then as far as the typical team size, I think that where you really start benefiting from this, you know, as John mentioned, it could be in the 50s, it could be smaller. I think teams in the 20s, you know, could certainly benefit from having something like this. But as Simon pointed out, you have other alternatives such as cloud-based services, be it Box.net or some of the 37 Signals products, and those could certainly fit the bill as well. So it all depends on your needs, especially when it comes to compliance, making sure that you can document what your processes are for how you manage all this information and content.
So is it something that I would be able to just apt-get from a Debian command line or on Ubuntu, or is it something I'm going to have specialized skills to install?
Yeah, we're in a partner repository, so you would have to enable the Ubuntu partner repo, but you should be able to then do an apt-get alfresco-community. And similarly, we're working on an Alfresco Enterprise distribution for Ubuntu. That said, we get a lot of demand for running Alfresco and Ubuntu for trials, you know, for people who are experimenting and kicking the tires, but not enough for production. So we haven't added official support for Alfresco Ubuntu packages. That said, our installer does work and is supported on Ubuntu, so you would just download the installer instead.
Now, presuming I'm big enough to already have, you know, something for my 500 people that are sharing documents, some sort of content management system, what's it like to migrate from somebody else's CMS over to Alfresco? Is that possible? Are there importers for the metadata, or how does it all work?
Yeah, there's we partner with a company, a French company, that has connectors to all the different content management systems overall. It's called EntropySoft. And so they can move in and out of Alfresco. And I think with the advent of CMIS, it's going to, you'll probably see a lot more of these overall. And there's lots of other partners that have their own migration packages. Perhaps the easiest way to do this, though, is if you have a dump of all the files that are out there, an XML description language or descriptor of all the files that are there. It's pretty easy to just go ahead and say Alfresco is a shared drive and just copy everything over from that perspective. Our dump and load facility actually looks very, very similar to SharePoint's import-export file format. So it's just a transformation on the XML descriptors that come out of SharePoint to be able to move into Alfresco. So it's not complicated at all.
Cool. And how do you decide how many machines this needs to run on? How do you come up with scaling numbers? And does it, you said there was a huge installation, so it obviously scales well, right?
Yeah, yeah. So when you're talking about more than several hundred users, you'd certainly probably want some sort of redundancy. So two servers in a cluster to get started if you want it to be up all the time and you don't want one of the machines to go down. A single server is actually capable of handling a couple hundred users easily, if not more, a lot more than that overall. Really, when you start to get into the thousands of users, you're talking about cluster configuration, maybe 3-4 machines, something like that. But most, the vast majority probably have about two servers, something like that, up and going, just for redundancy more than anything else, and that tends to handle pretty good loads overall.
Yeah, one of the examples I use is. Is a customer who was running Alfresco in a 6-node cluster, serving up a combined user base of 3 million registered users, about 2,000 to 3,000 concurrent, and they were doing reasonably well with that 6-node environment, and they had several hundred terabytes of content in the repository.
Yeah, because most of this is really, you're just moving bytes around. It's not really like there's anything really computationally intensive happening here. Although I did see in one of the demo videos transferring a file from Word to PDFs. And if somebody was doing a lot of that, you'd probably need more CPU, right?
Yeah, yeah. And so those sort of things are tend to be asynchronous anyway. There's a rule system inside of Alfresco that you can determine whether something like when I put a Word document in, maybe create an ODF version of it for compliance reasons or retention, or create a PDF out of it for records management. So conversions like that can be CPU intensive. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. It depends on the size of them. And we also do things like automatically generate thumbnails as well. So that sort of stuff is going on in the background, and it's the kind of things that doesn't really matter if you need to get them right away or not. If you do have those, then you can offload some of that onto other processors. It's a nice, clean architecture to be able to segment off that processing onto other machines.
And I know there's some government standards about who has access to, say, my medical records or my credit records. Is there enough security controls and something like this that I could easily deploy that kind of material?
Yeah, we were just certified by the U.S. government, well, probably about a year ago, for something called DoD 5015.2, which is a records management standard. And it goes through a very exhaustive list of controls that need to be put into place for, security, for being able to make sure that things are actually delivered for Freedom of Information Act and things like that. And you don't pass this unless you fulfill this huge document, several inches thick of all the test suites of all the capabilities that they're looking for. And It's two testers that that go on site and test the product for about 2 weeks to make sure that it does comply with all those standards and requirements. So, it is definitely capable of handling a whole range of different requirements, including some European standards along those lines.
Wonderful.
So, John, to change tack a little bit here, one of the ways that I've often seen Alfresco when I've been out and about in the business space is competing with Microsoft. You often show up as the only viable alternative to Microsoft SharePoint. How do you view SharePoint as a competitor? Do you see them as a peer or as something that people migrate from to you, or as a threat for people migrating from you to them as they mature?
Well, if you have bought into a 100% Microsoft stack and you want to do all your development in .NET and you're happy running on Windows and SQL Server, then I don't think we're ever going to convince you that you want to use Alfresco. Fortunately, that is not anywhere near the majority of companies that are out there. We've tried to be the open standard, you know, by using Java, by being able to integrate with things like PHP and other scripting languages to support easy development. But by and large, there are two reasons why people have chosen us against SharePoint. And when we did a recent customer survey, we had about 30% of our customers respond, and 66% of those respondents said that they had evaluated SharePoint as part of the process of selecting Alfresco. The reasons, number one reason was that it was open source, you know, that the source code is there. They don't feel like they're locked in. They can actually see what's going on overall. Number two reason was just the lower cost overall. And the third reason was support for open standards. We tried to be as open as possible. We try to make Alfresco fungible. So the more likely it is that you can replace us, the more likely it is that you will actually use us. So we can see that SharePoint is the competition. We're also sitting side by side with SharePoint as well. It does get in there. It is, SharePoint is insidious. It's tied to the Microsoft Office system as well, and that tends to pull things through. I see us as being a competitor whenever somebody tries to bring in SharePoint as part of creating content applications, or they're doing lightweight document management, or if they're certainly doing heavyweight document management, because our core competence is in content management and enterprise content management, and we've been doing this actually longer than Microsoft has overall. We do partner with other people for the other components that SharePoint deals with. So you will see lots of Liferay and Alfresco working together, where Liferay is the portal and Alfresco is the content management system. And in our latest release, we try to make that just out of the box integration as easy as possible. So Alfresco gets exposed as a set of portlets inside of a Liferay portal. So I think you'll see us, you know, hitting head-to-head more and more often, especially as interest in the established, legacy systems of enterprise content management are having a tougher time in new projects and enterprises, or as renewals are starting to come up and the price tag comes up as $2 to $5 million, you know, people are just evaluating their options. When they evaluate their options, they are going to look at SharePoint. And if they're not a .NET shop, they're also going to be evaluating Alfresco as well.
So do you worry at all about the fact that Microsoft almost certainly has an arsenal of software patents in this domain? Have you taken protective measures like joining OIN?
Yes, we have. And in the area of SharePoint, Microsoft has actually been very explicit about the patents that they are going to that they will exercise around SharePoint. And we did take measures to get legal advice on, you know, are we safe in the areas and on what we've done? And are we, you know, we have built the system to make sure that we're not conflicting with those patents. So I think we've taken both approaches on this.
Right. And how do you feel about the progress of open document format? Do you think that's making enough of an impact to generate a market for you going forward, or do you still feel that OXML is a threat?
I think OXML still is a threat, and we've done our best to help the ODF guys. You know, they're just, you know, we've met with them several times. We've been able to work with some of the governments that have been very open to ODF as their archival and retention formats. And, you know, we've added things like automatic conversion of Office formats into ODF to be able to support that overall. But, there's still a long way to go in this battle overall. So, we'll continue to do our best on that one.
This is clearly a big project. You have a number of developers working on this. And how many are inside the company? How many are outside the company?
Inside the company, worldwide, including some of the stuff in Eastern Europe, we've got probably somewhere around the range of about 55 to 60 people mm-hmm. working on Alfresco. And outside the company, some of our system integrators have been very, very active in this and very supportive overall, and some of our customers as well. Particularly local government here in the UK has been very helpful in some of our collaboration capabilities. But I'm not sure I can really count the number of people. As ACCP gets up and going, it'll be a lot easier to actually count them.
We're just launching that program. Go ahead.
Do the outside people actually have commit access, or is this all gated through employees?
Luis, why don't you go ahead and take it?
The committer program, which we launched a few months ago, defines the process by which a contribution will be accepted, and so it's very similar in its spirit to the way that Apache code contributions are processed and so forth. So the idea is that these extensions will be incubated, and then the good ones are accepted into the core.
And is this is the development process happening in public too as well? Do you have like the bug,
yeah.
bug database, the SVN or whatever you use for check-in and check-out?
Yeah, exactly. We have a Jira-based issue tracking system, issues.alfresco.com. It's out there in the open. Our Subversion repository is also equally available, and it's svn.alfresco.com. All this is actually documented on our wiki, so just go to wiki.alfresco.com and you'll be able to find that information.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, you guys have done a great job presenting this. I now realize that this is probably, I'm going to say it's probably the best of breed in this area in the open source in terms of large enterprise CMS. I'm glad you got a chance to inform our audience about this. Is there any last things that we didn't manage to cover in the show?
Well, for my part, I want to invite all listeners and watchers to come to our developer conference on November 3rd and 4th in New York City. And there's a 25% discount code. Just use FLOSS25, you'll get 25% off. And this conference is going to be great. We have 42 sessions scheduled, already in excess of 150 people attending. So we want to get more people to attend and contribute and listen.
And John, any last words from you?
Yeah, I guess this is an opportunity as well to take a look at the latest version of Alfresco as well that just came out. It's the community version of 3.4. There's some great stuff in terms of a new distributed architecture, automatic replication, easy setup of replication from one server to another, some new web content management capabilities, and the new LifeRay portals that I mentioned before. So that's all available at alfresco.com as well.
Very good. Very good. Well, I want to thank you guys for coming on the show today. I really appreciate that. Thanks again to John Newton, the CTO of Alfresco, and Luis Sala, who is the Chief Community Officer for Alfresco. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Great. And so pretty interesting. I'm not, this isn't my area, so I didn't have a lot to say. But Simon, I'm glad you jumped in there. You really had some good questions.
Yeah, we're at a transition point for open source projects like Alfresco that have arisen and grown strong during the last decade. And I think they've got a lot of scope to do very well as particularly regional governments decide that open source and patent-free standards are going to be the key to their enterprises. And I think there's great opportunity that they can create for other developers in the open source space. So a very interesting company that I'm going to be keeping a careful eye on.
And I also like that, you know, that really open source, for open source to be a viable option for something that is this complex, the amount of stuff that's actually in this level of enterprise software is really saying that, you know, there's really nothing that open source can't tackle these days.
Well, absolutely. There's really no reason why you can't get a bunch of people together to co-develop software of any complexity. The real question is whether the governance is there to allow the people with the right skills to show up. And that was really the point of my question about the transition into multi-party community. During the last decade, we've been in a place where the conventional wisdom, particularly from VCs, has been that control is better than cooperation. And I have a hunch we're going to see more and more companies slowly creeping out into a space where they realize that actually there's all sorts of people they didn't hire that have got great skills who they could get involved. I think that's what, for example, Eucalyptus are seeing. I'm sure they're wishing that they hadn't annoyed NASA and that they had NASA contributing to Eucalyptus instead of building up OpenStack. And I'm sure we're going to see people working with their customers. Their large customers have got internal teams with the skills. Why not get them in the community co-developing? And the steps necessary to do that, I'm sure, are in the future of many projects like Alfresco.
Absolutely. And especially with open source, you have the opportunity to move the talent closer to the problems, which is really useful because, you know, people here at the company that I'm working at know better what this company needs for something like an enterprise CMS than say, somebody sitting in an office in Europe somewhere, right?
Absolutely. Ultimately, your customer knows what the product should do, and you get better products when your customer is able to influence the product, and there's no better way of influencing the product than co-developing it with you. But still, my vision is beyond just customers. I look at the success of Apache. Look at Apache HTTPD. Its success came through allowing many parties with different views on what the software should be doing to collaborate over it. And indeed, Alfresco has been created with a lot of components that were built that way. Many of the technologies that John and Luis named arose from collaborative co-development communities. So I'm convinced that this is the next step in free software. But hey, you've heard me say that three times now.
It never gets said enough, actually, which is the whole reason for this show, to make sure more people are aware of just how much cool stuff there is out there. That's what we do. Very good. Very good. Well, speaking of cool stuff and what we do, let me talk about the upcoming schedule. I've added a bunch of people. I've got all my November and December scheduling, so I have a bunch of new people to run down today for upcoming shows. We have still on the schedule for next week, sorry. We have Darren Schreiber. We're going to talk to us about 2600 Hertz Project, which is a end-to-end telephony, all sorts of telephony components put together in a way that's consistent and coherent and useful. We also have a couple of shows while I'm out on a cruise ship. I'm trying to do those off hours. You won't see them in the live stream every Wednesday morning at 9:30 in the morning, Leo time, which is Pacific time on the west coast of the U.S. But I'm going to try to get John O'Bacon back on. You might remember him from some previous Floss Weekly shows. He's doing some new open source music with his Severed Fifth project. I'm going to get Patrick Michaud to talk about Rakuto, which is the current best implementation of Perl 6, and talk about the status of Perl 6, where it's going with all that. So we'll have those while I'm out at sea. We have just added to the schedule, we have James Phillips of Membase, which is one of the applications to speed up websites by making a nice cache layer used by lots and lots of very big websites for that. We have, I'm going to mispronounce this, I know I am, Karinder Singh with CentOS, the whole CentOS project, which is the Red Hat, essentially Red Hat Community Edition, taking all the Red Hat stuff and recompiling it so that it's completely open source and free. John Abbey from the Ganymede. Ganymede is managing network directory services, such as NIS, DNS, NetInfo, and LDAP, open source version of that. We have Thomas Garand talk to us about GPL Host, which is a provisioning system that lets you run large data centers and bring hosts up real quickly. David Ankers, James Cotton, really looking forward to this one, Open Pilot. Open source unmanned aerial vehicles, UAVs. They got all the flying stuff for that. They're allowed to fly around and without, it's going to be great. So hopefully we get some video on that show too. And Mark Laporte on TikiWiki, which is a groupware platform, started as a wiki, worked its way out now to just about everything, bug tracking, change management, all sorts of things, kind of like what we had for today. Lots of people coming up. You can go to twitch.tv/floss, look at the upcoming list there. If you have names that are on there that we aren't already talking to, please inform them and let them email me, and then that's how they get on the show. You can follow me on Twitter, by the way. I'm at Merlin, M-E-R-L-Y-N, on Twitter. Next week, you'll see me back at home. I'll have a big blue Yeti again, so it'll be fun. And then I'm heading off to Europe, as I said. So I will try to have shows regularly in this feed, though. And also, one more thing for me to plug before I let Simon do a little bit of plugging here. I am reading science fiction short stories for StarshipSofa.com. I'm really enjoying doing that, speaking of my big blue Yeti, using that for that. And so check that out. I've done a couple pieces for them already, and I'm doing a few more coming up in the near future. That's enough plugs for me. Simon, what do you want to plug today?
You know, I have so little to plug compared with that. I feel inadequate now. So I just encourage viewers to follow me on Twitter and Identica, where you'll find that I'm at Webmink, and to take a look at the stuff that I'm writing for Computer World UK on the Simon Says blog and on my personal blog at webmink.com. We've missed the conference season. I was at OWF in Paris last week, which was a great show. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, Open Source World Congress in Malaga in 2 weeks' time has been cancelled. So the place I was going to meet everybody has sadly been called off, and we won't be able to go over there. Seems the government of Andalusia ran out of money and decided not to sponsor it. So that's all I've got to plug is Twitter and blog. It's just nothing compared to your plugs there, Randall.
Well, most of it was about the show, not about me. But I do get around. I think that's really the point. So anyway, I think I've covered everything. I think I've got everything on the list. And it's been a little bit of a long show, but I hope you all appreciate the information we brought to you. And we'll see you all again next time on Floss Weekly.